Radio Cherry Bomb is produced by Heritage Radio Network, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station devoted to all things food. Help keep HRN alive by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate. Beginning as Balducci's Fruit Stand in Greenwich Village 70 years ago, Baldor Specialty Foods has been curating and delivering the highest quality foods in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. Chefs rely on Baldor for the freshest and most seasonal ingredients, along with new and exciting items that you just can't get elsewhere. Baldor's ordering process is designed with a chef's schedule and priorities in mind to get you what you need when you need it. Baldor is the trusted resource and partner for the region's top chefs. Learn what Baldor can do for your business today at baldorfood.com. Were you into avocado toast before any of your friends? Do you know how to whip up some cashew cream? And do you make your own almond milk? If so, you're our kind of person, and you might be interested in the classes at the Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts, located in the heart of Manhattan. Founded in 1977, NGI is the first culinary school dedicated to healthy cooking to be accredited nationally. Their professional chef's training program is offered full and part-time, and several of our favorite chefs are alumni, including Dirt Candy's Amanda Cohen, Alyssa Wagner of Dimes, and Chloe Coscarelli of By Chloe. Visit the NGI website to learn how you can transform your life and your career. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Carrie Diamond, co-founder and editorial director of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food. All summer long, we're sharing some of our favorite talks and panels from this year's Cherry Bomb Jubilee, our annual celebration of women doing remarkable things in the world of food. First, here are the sponsors who help keep Cherry Bomb on the air. The Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts, where you can start your journey to becoming a natural food chef today. Baldor Specialty Foods, which curates and delivers the best and freshest food in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. Prince Street, the fresh new podcast with a culinary heart from Dean and DeLuca. Today, we'll hear from Padma Lakshmi, the best-selling author and top chef star, who is reading an excerpt from her memoir, Love, Loss, and What We Ate. Introducing Padma is the writer Priya Krishna. We'll hear from both of them right after this message.
Today's episode is brought to you by Prince Street, Dean and DeLuca's monthly podcast dedicated to the delicious and infinite connections between people and food. Each new Prince Street podcast features special guests, field reports, and meals from around the world. Editor-in-Chief Howie Kahn hosts the show, featuring segments from correspondents such as Griffin Dunn, Jay McInerney, Eden Grinspan, and Sierra Tischgart. Download Prince Street on iTunes and online at livefromprincestreet.com. Prince Street, a fresh new podcast with a culinary heart.
And I am very excited to introduce someone incredible who has taught me a lot of very important life skills, including but not limited to how to make kumquat achar or pickle, how to squat correctly at the gym, and how to strategically push up your boobs to keep a sari in place. Padma Lakshmi is an actress. She's an entrepreneur. She's now an author, among other things. We met 3 years ago. She twerked for me in her living room, and since then she's been one of the people that's inspired me most since I moved to New York. She's warm and genuine and passionate and always hungry, and I think that that's all evident in her memoir that she's just written, Love, Loss, and What We Ate, which she'll be reading from and signing today. Padma has blazed this amazing and really meaningful trail in every industry she's touched, food included, that's based on embracing exactly who you are in the most uncompromising way. And I think that's something for me that's been really hard and not so easy. And I think for all those women like myself who grew up feeling not cool enough or not pretty enough or not good enough, I think that what Padma's charm is that she makes you feel exactly that. She makes you feel enough. She makes you feel really proud to be who you are. She makes me especially proud to be an Indian woman, and I feel really lucky to count her as a mentor and a friend and part-time personal trainer. So here's Padma reading from her book, Love, Loss, and What We Ate.
I'm so excited to be here. I'm so excited that Cherry Bomb exists and that this Jubilee exists. I wish it had existed so many years ago when I was starting out in a very different landscape about 15 years ago in the food business. But I am so thankful to see all of you faces, and I look forward to this magazine when it comes home very much. I actually ask for people not to talk to me for a couple of hours so I can go away and while away the time by looking at the pages. The book I'm reading to you from is my memoir called Love, Loss, and What We Ate. It came out a month ago, and took me over 4.5 years to birth it, which was the longest and hardest thing I've ever had to do. I'm going to read to you briefly from the section of the book that's from my childhood. I spent my childhood shuttling between a home with a single mom here in New York City who was a nurse, and I was pretty much a latchkey kid. And then every year, the month that school got out, the week after school got out in June, I would spend 3 months in India in my grandparents' house, which was a two-bedroom flat in South India, in Madras, which is now called Chennai, and which had 8 to 10 people living in it at any time, minimum, but was very happy and very wonderful. And so those two existences really made me who I am. The close proximity in which people lived in India was in stark contrast to my independent existence in America. Here, everyone knew another's business, and in general, personal space and privacy were ephemeral. For naps, I always chose a spot on the cool green marble floor, close to the side of the bed where my grandfather, or KCK as he was called, slept. It was that same spot my grandmother favored in rare moments of quiet. I watched his large, bear-like belly, barely covered by his undershirt, rise and fall. You could time a clock to the sound of his gentle snoring. I'd often wait for the sounds of his waking, the familiar clearing of his throat, a grumble, and a mumble. He'd open one eye, peer down at me, and whisper so as not to rouse my grandmother, a notoriously light sleeper. Still asleep beside him. Psst, hey, pads, he'd say. There's a 2 rupee note in my bush shirt pocket hanging over there. What say you go to the all-in-one and grab a little something for you and me? The all-in-one was the first store to sprout up among the colony flats, the Indian version of the many bodegas and Korean delis that define daily life in New York. The all-in-one was the size of a small single-car garage. It sold shaving cream, laundry detergent, plastic paper wastebaskets, and buckets for bathing, the disinfectant Dettol, bandages, medicines from Valium to aspirin to asthma inhalers, scissors, paper, pencils, copybooks, savory snacks, chocolates, and Rusna, a powdered drink mix similar to Tang, but less like orange juice. Most of it kept under a glass counter or behind it in a glass cabinet. There were little jars of candies and biscuits and 5 paisa, about 1/20th of a rupee, which was about 1/60th of a dollar, packets of chiclets. There were 2 coolers, one for soft drink bottles and the other a metal ice box for popsicles and ice cream. In the back of the all-in-one, jute sacks of rice, sugar, lentils, coffee, and other raw goods lay heaped behind an iron scale. 2 round iron plates hung from the ceiling by chains attached to a bar. The clanging sound that the plates made as goods were measured and sold was ear-piercing in intensity. I made anywhere from 3 to 8 trips a day to the all-in-one. I could be dispatched there for oil by my grandmother or for a notebook by Neela, or accompany my Uncle Ravi when he was in town and went to buy cigarettes on the sly, bribing me with cold Indian sodas and Cadbury Dairy Milk chocolate bars. My post-nap trips to the store were always clandestine. After instructing me to fish out the rupee notes from his shirt pocket, my grandfather would put a finger to his lips. I knew I had to remove his shirt from the hook by the cupboard without jingling any change that may have been resting in its pockets. I had to take the amount he instructed and slip out of the room. Even if I'd succeeded in not waking my grandmother, I still had to elude inquiries from my busybody Aunt Banu, who, if not napping in her own room with her daughter Rajani, would be in the kitchen preparing for 5 o'clock tea and tiffin. I never bothered to fish out my chappals or slippers from the shoe closet by the front door because the sliding wooden doors made too much noise. And anyway, our whole street was sand. The rest of the neighborhood kids and I played barefoot. But the main road was tarred. And at that time of the day, with the sun high in the sky and my path baking under the Coromandel heat, walking briskly, let alone casually strolling, would mean second-degree burns. But if I ran as fast as I could, literally hot-footing it, I could just about endure until I reached the cool relief of the all-in-one stone floor to complete my task. I was to buy 2 single-serving vanilla ice cream cups, one for me and one for KCK. He loved those little cups, each with a wooden spoon taped to the bottom. I usually had enough change to buy myself a small packet of rose mints, Pez-shaped baby pink candies with a mild but distinct flavor and light floral scent. On the way home, I carried the 2 cups in one hand and the mints and change in the other. I tried to run even faster because in addition to suffering the scalding tarred road and maintaining the secret of my mission, I had to contend with the melting ice cream. KCK and I ate the cups of ice cream quickly in the bedroom while my grandma slept, beaming at each other between bites, the lovely pain of cold in our mouths. When I went for my mission, I always left the front door slightly ajar, barely noticeable to the passing eye, so I could easily sneak back in. It almost always worked. Almost. Once, though, Aunt Banu caught me upon my return as the door squeaked open. "Eh, what are you doing outside in the sun?" She seemed really mad, as if I'd stolen from her purse. Just then, my grandfather cleared his throat loudly and called out for her to bring him tea. "Bads just came in somewhere, Tata," she tattled. "She left the door open and has gone without telling anyone. Now she has something in her hands and all." "It's fine, Banu. I asked her to fetch me a stamp from All-in-One." Perhaps the only thing the All-in-One didn't sell was stamps. "I told her to get a little something for herself. Send me her here. I'll deal with the child. And bring me my chai, please. My throat is bothering." Banu knew that my grandfather was never short of stamps, given his weekly trips to the post office for his pension checks, but she also knew never to cross her father-in-law. I slid sheepishly past her and into the bedroom. The commotion, of course, had roused my grandmother lying in the bed. As soon as we put wooden spoon to paper cup, she said, without moving or even opening her eyes, "Will you please stop putting that child up to no good?" Rajima kept a low profile and rarely contradicted her husband outside of the bedroom. But in the privacy of that room, from our place on the floor, Neela and I heard her speak her mind. We learned who really had the seat of power in our family. I wouldn't understand until years later, while my errand caused such a row between 2 loving and mild-mannered people. KCK was diabetic. Severely so. And he was afflicted with a mighty sweet tooth. He'd need one to love the vast array of saccharine Indian sweets, which he did, but which I decidedly do not. He adored laddus and jalebis and paisams laced with cardamom and cashews in thick, sweet milk. Paisams I didn't mind, but only as an adult have I come to like laddus, tiny balls of deep-fried chickpea flour mixed with nuts and raisins and bound by syrup into large balls. I still feel sick after eating the traffic cone orange jalebis, sugary dough extruded into hot saffron-spiked oil. Fortunately for me, he didn't stop at these traditional confections. He also kept a sleeve of Marie biscuits hidden behind the volumes on his bookshelf. He'd snack on them, I'm sure, but he'd also dole them out as treats for us kids. Occasionally, when a burst of affection for us overtook him, or when one of his students did well on a quiz, he'd produce a biscuit, as if out of nowhere, as a reward. Casey Kay taught me to make the first dessert I ever considered replicating myself. A simple cold pie sum of mashed bananas, milk, sugar, cinnamon, or cardamom. I've always preferred salty, tangy, crunchy things to sweets, especially the aggressively sugary Indian sweets. But for him, I would have eaten all the laddus and jalebis in Madras. My grandmother allowed me to make banana pie sum for the prasadam that accompanied the religious ceremonies we marked at home. The flavors I loved most were the tart sour notes and things like green mango and tamarind. Before school, my new best friends and I would sit under a tamarind tree on the campus of St. Michael's Academy. From its shade, we'd watch Mrs. Balagopal, my plump, smiling third grade teacher, arrive on her scooter, her colorful, wild printed sari fluttering behind her like a superhero's cape. I'd look for Dee, a boy who lived in the neighborhood. He was taller than the others and a great cricket player to boot. Every so often, a strong breeze shook the boughs of the tamarind trees. We'd hear a rustling, and pods would tumble down through the lacy leaves to fall on the ground. Sometimes they would hit us just as they fell on the head. Buck! When they're brown and ripe, the papery pods contain sweet, tangy flesh, clinging to stone-like seeds. But as kids, we'd also eat them when they were still green. My grandmother loved these young pods, still seedless, crisp and tart like green mango. Kana, there's some nice imli pods at your school, she'd remind me. Knock a few down and bring them back in your school bag. If none fell on their own, I'd chuck stones at the tree. The silky rustling of tamarind leaves always reminded me of the rustling of my grandmother's sari. Women in my family kept their bodies hidden, their breasts and bellies concealed even from their children and husbands. Only after my grandmother had cleaned up with Banu, turned off the lights, and put everyone to sleep would she dare creep through the bedroom, past me and Neela, to change her sari. I'd hear her unwrapping herself from 6 yards of fabric, the colorful silk and the folds of her body invisible in the darkness. I'd hear her searching her sari for the rupees she kept tied in a small bundle of fabric at the end, a soft makeshift pocket. Indian women hide many things in their saris. Extra keys, safety pins, loose change, gemstones. In the 70s, some women, though certainly not Jima, even hid hashish to be smuggled through customs in a compartment sewn into the bottom hem. It was a real problem at customs. Sometimes, as she undressed and shook out her sari, a little bundle would strike me or Neela, just like those falling tamarind pods. We would stifle our giggles. We knew that even though we couldn't see it, she was exposed. At the time, our only response to this advanced screening of womanhood was laughter. In that room, late at night, I'd also sometimes hear an urgent murmuring that I never quite understood to be what I now know it was, the quiet pleas of my grandfather trying to get frisky in the dark. The forced proximity of our lives meant an intense physical closeness. When I was scared by a nightmare, I'd find my whimpering soothed by the arm of my grandfather reaching down to envelop me from his bed. Thank you.
To read more about Padma's fascinating life, pick up her memoir, Love, Loss, and What We Ate. It's a beautifully written book, and the parts about her childhood in India are particularly evocative. I read it earlier this year and couldn't put it down. Thank you to Padma and to Priya. That's it for this episode of Radio Cherry Bomb. If you would like to be in the know about next year's Jubilee in New York and our upcoming San Francisco Jubilee, sign up for our mailing list at cherrybomb.com. Thanks to our engineer, Dave Tatasciore, and thanks again to our sponsors for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb. Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts. Start your journey to becoming a natural food chef today by visiting ngihca.edu. Prince Street, a fresh podcast with a culinary heart. For more, visit livefromprincestreet.com or download the Prince Street podcast from iTunes. Baldor Specialty Foods curates and delivers the best and freshest food in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. Learn what Baldor can do for your business today at baldorfood.com. Thank you for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
I'm Lauren of Rococo Ice Cream, Southern Maine's destination for globally inspired ice cream flavors. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Judith Irving, Callie Hastings, and all those adorable goats over at Fat Toad Farm in Brookfield, Vermont. They make the decadent goat's milk caramel that we're all in love with.